Hi, I'm Josh. I was born in poverty-laden Flint, Michigan to a blue-collar working family. I went from pulling weeds, washing dishes, and delivering pizzas to building a small business doing over $150,000 a month. I sold it and moved to Costa Rica with my wife and four kids. And on this podcast, we explore the secrets and the strategies that I used to win. Building your business is one of the hardest things you will ever do. So let me finally help you automate, grow, and someday sell your company. I'll get my cheesy podcast mic voice going.
All right. So will I.
All right. Welcome to the Quick Talk Podcast with Josh Lennon.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Hey, everybody. Josh here. Thank you for joining me here on the Quick Talk Podcast. I have a really interesting guy on the line with me, my new friend, Brandon, who I met in Washington, D.C. at the huge convention. He was an attendee there. And he's got a crazy story, so I invited him to come on the podcast to share it with you because he's going to provide some serious value to you guys. And I'm recording this from Las Vegas, Nevada, which is weird. You know, I came here to meet up with Joe Kowalski, the CEO of Service Monster, because we're working on an integration with Send Jim and stuff. So I'm in a hotel room. Brandon, you have my full attention. Welcome. Give us a little bit of your background.
Thanks, man. So my background is I have about 17 years in the window cleaning business, experience wise. But it's not as traditional as you might think. My dad actually started All Clean Window Service as an owner operator window cleaner in 1978. So he's actually been, you know, the guy on the other side of the glass washing windows for 33 years. And for 13 of those years, actually, when I started full time at age 13, working with my dad washing windows, I was his single employee. So pretty much from that time up until about 18, I worked full time with my dad until I decided that, you know, I wanted to kind of go out and start my own window cleaning business.
Awesome.
I did that for a brief period of time, grew tired of that, and then actually joined a couple other jobs and did the corporate world for about 2 years until travel demanded too much of me, and went back out, did an entrepreneur, you know, thing again, and had a construction company for a couple years, and then in 2011 my dad actually was diagnosed with heart disease. So he approached me, and you know, with him and his one employee, literally no retirement set aside at all over the 33 years, he was kind of struggling. So he kind of, you know, pitched this idea to me for me to join back into the business and, you know, buy it, help him retire. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, my last 17 years.
That's a ton of stuff I got to ask you now. Like, that's such a crazy story. Like, my mind's racing. Okay, number one, your dad had a business for 33 years. You took it over in 2012. And we're going to talk about the fact that you're joining the seven-figure club now, that you've, since 2012 to 2016, you've taken that little business and you've 10x'd it, right? You're going to do over $1 million this year. It's crazy. It's crazy. And we'll get into that in a minute. But I love the fact that you worked when you were 13. I think that's awesome. You probably had all kinds of cash and your friends were like, thought you were a baller because you were one of, that's what I did when I was
a little bit. Yeah. Although the double-edged side of the coin, the sword was that my dad also made me pay for everything, including my own clothes and food. And then he started charging me rent. And so it was, you know, it was kind of one of those money principles that he instilled in me.
Yeah, one, you know, of the things value you hate when you're young, and then now it's like, oh, is it coincidence that you've built a $1 million business? Probably not. I think Dad probably did a few things right. But the other,
sure.
the big one that I got out of what you said in your intro was that your dad got diagnosed with heart disease, and this is the fear. This is the thing I talk about with people all the time: is what's going to happen to your business if you get hurt, if you get sick, if you fall off a ladder, whatever. Because really, your dad never had a business. He was just self-employed. He owned his own job. And the moment that he got sick, it was over. His income was over, right? I mean, tell us a little bit of your perspective on that.
You know, it was I think that was my biggest motivation to buy my business and to do things differently. You know, my dad is one of the hardest workers that I've ever known. You know, he was so diligent. He was always on time. He was so focused on our customers. He was such a an example in everything that a service person should be in the business, in my opinion. And, you know, his ethics, his values. But the one thing that he never did was set aside any money for retirement. You know, he, even though he was an owner-operator, he was still kind of living, you know, a paycheck-to-paycheck mentality, to where he'd spend it up and not really set anything aside. And, you know, when it did finally happen to where his doctor told him literally, you know, hey, you can't work physically anymore. You know, the one thing that you can no longer do is put your hands up over your head and squeegee and wash windows. That was a pretty big blow, and it was a pretty big eye opener for me, you know, to be like, to not want to follow in those same footsteps of being able to survive the bus factor. You know, if a bus hits you tomorrow, would your business be able to continue on without you? And when my dad was kind of put to that test, you know, it was kind of the sharp realization that, you know, no, it couldn't survive without him.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I know you have kids. You're a family guy. I'm a family guy. And I started my company. My wife was pregnant with my first son, and I was so focused on building a real business, even from the beginning, even when I knew nothing of what to do, because you want an asset for your family. You know, if you get hit by the bus, let's say you're dead. You know, my business and your business, as you're building it now, is still a sellable asset, or they can hold it and operate it. My philosophy is that when you're done systemizing your business, and you're never quite done, but when it's fully there, you basically could hand a binder to a little old lady, and she could operate your business, right?
Yeah, that's definitely the goal, and that's one of the things that you know, us and our team, we is our main driving focus right now, is to try to get it to that point. Because it's, you know, even though, yeah, our business is being successful and everything else, like you said, it's never done growing, and you're always finding little small things to fine tune. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah, it's like when you take a field and you want to plant a farm, but it's forest. And so you chop down the trees. And the trees are the big obvious issues, like, hey, I need a phone number. I need to know what to say to these people when they call. I need to know how to sell and how to price my stuff. Once you get that in place, you realize, okay, now there's still stumps all over this land. And then you got to rip out the stumps. And that's a whole nother level of systemization, automation. And then you get those out and you realize there's rocks in the ground. And so you get all the big rocks out, and then you realize there's medium-sized rocks. There's always more. It gets down to the pebble level. And you guys, All Clean in Portland, Oregon, are killing it right now. So tell me, what did your dad think as you started taking over with a completely different philosophy, really going against his whole core foundational view of reality? Like, what are you doing? Like, was he scared? Was he supportive? What are these conversations like in 2012 and 13 when you got the process started?
Oh, man. You're bringing back lots of memories, Josh. I tried to bury these things.
Well, you can just open the box and give us a peek. Just give us a peek, and you can close the box and bury it again.
Okay. All right. So my dad, he was mortified. He was petrified, mortified. You know, he's very prone to stress, thus heart disease. So it was this fantastic balancing act that we had to strike between, you know, realizing what needed to be done to be able to grow the business, doing things differently. My dad hated change. When we hired our first employee, it taught me to become a good salesman to my dad. Because anytime we were going to, you know, buy that new piece of equipment or add on a new hire or, you know, invest in some trade associations or join our local chamber of commerce, I had to sell my dad as to why that was a good idea. And it actually forced me to become a really diligent researcher because I had to create this presentation. And I think for me, the biggest life lesson that I learned over that first year was that I had to create systems of accountability to myself in everything that I did. And so even if, you know, you're in your business, you don't have your dad to, you know, have to pitch your ideas to, find a business mentor, find your spouse, you know, anyone who you can talk to kind of pitch and sell these ideas. Because having that sounding board of someone who is really negative and, you know, very terrified of these things, it actually proved to build quite a bit of resiliency in me to plan out things to the, you know, the nth degree to be able to, you know, continue to grow. And so, you know, it was a double-sided thing again, where it was a struggle for sure, but at the same token, there was a lot of actually hidden benefits that we found in having to pitch that and convince my dad that, okay, this is the good next step, and here's the reasons why.
Wow, dude. Brandon, you're dropping value all out of the sky on us. Like, seriously, that's so good, man. And we want to avoid friction so often, yeah, right? I mean, we want to avoid confrontation. We don't want to defend ourselves, especially entrepreneurs, because entrepreneurs are a little bit rebellious, a little bit kind of cocky sometimes. We think we're smarter than we are, especially when we're young. But you did it the right way. You used wisdom. I mean, duh, I wish I would have done that more in the beginning. And the friction is why your business has just killed it. I mean, the rate of growth you have is nowhere near normal. It's very, very, very crazy to 10x a business that quick. So let's dig into that a little bit. Okay, you take over a business. You got a foundation of 100 grand in revenue. You got a helper. You know how to clean yourself. Where did you start? I mean, you have personal income that you need to take. Did you do what I think you did, which is pay yourself very little and start reinvesting like a madman? Did you use debt? How did you scale in the beginning? And tell us about that.
So I'll kind of break it apart into two different categories: the financing side of it, and then also the personal investment side of it. With the financing part of it, yes, I did take a modest salary, and I've actually haven't given myself a raise since I first started to grow the business. For me, it's not about money. I make a comfortable living. We have a comfortable house. We have a comfortable life. I don't feel the need to have more things and nicer stuff. I like to be debt-free. I like to, you know, maintain that lifestyle. But for me, it was a little bit easier to reinvest back into the business because we had that little bit of extra working capital, and let it kind of sit there and let it kind of, you know, we were able to use that cash part of it. We actually completely stayed 100% debt-free actually until this very last year when we got a business line of credit, and we actually got that for security reasons. You know, again, the bus factor. If something, you know, devastating happened to you or your business, would you have a little bit of cushion? So we got that for cushion. We also financed our first vehicle. Everything else we've bought and paid for, you know, with cash up until this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, you know what? It's normal, because my business, when it started to really grow, there's different problems at different levels. And one of the hardest things is managing, you know, your receivables and your payroll and your cash flow. The bigger you get, right, the harder it is. I mean, yes, towards the end for us, just we were a seasonal business, so we kind of shut down for a few months. And in the spring, it would cost us between 20 and 40,000 cash coming out of 3 months of no income just to launch our business, just to fix the trucks, buy the uniforms, train the new people, float payroll for 3 or 4 weeks until we got cash flowing. So a line of credit is a great option, because I'm an advocate of being debt-free, of course. But if you use it correctly, it's a pretty normal thing to have access to capital like that at that size, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so as far as the personal investment side of things, this to me is where I attribute most of my success. I Josh, I'm nothing special, man. I mean, I'm a window cleaner, you know, that I've started at age 13. The only thing that I feel like I do well that I'll brag on myself is that I'm good at copying other people. I'm a good mimic. And so one of my biggest weaknesses is distraction. I get really easily distracted. I have very bad ADD. It's hard for me to stay focused. So what I knew I needed is I needed accountability partners. And so I actually teamed up with I reached out to our local SBDC, Small Business Development Center. They have free mentors, business mentors that were like the craziest caliber, that I couldn't believe they were free resources and that they would actually meet with me on a monthly basis. But, you know, I never had experience growing a business before. Even the small businesses that I kind of started up, you know, they were just like my dad's owner operator with a helper, you know, because that's all that I knew. So this whole new world of, you know, building a, you know, a multi-million dollar company and, you know, 20 plus employees and excuse me, it was very foreign to me, and I didn't know where to start. And so having those resources were invaluable to me. You know, adding on some good high quality services And then, which inevitably led to a lot of really good quality business coaching from, you know, various people that I kind of met in the industry. And then reading a lot of books, you know, just continuing to educate yourself that. I'm a big, avid bookworm right now.
Yeah, well, we're, all of us didn't invent what it takes to be successful because people already do this stuff. And to the people listening, we're all, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants, right? The cliche statement, but it's true. It's absolutely true. I have a friend, Chris Martinez. He's on Facebook like crazy all the time, makes a ton of free videos and stuff. And he has a whole website called the Copycat Entrepreneur, I think, .com.
I saw that, yeah.
And he, that's
good.
His deal. He's like, look, I found out what works. I actually did it. There's a concept. You actually execute. How do you execute? Do you do what Brandon just said? You get an accountability partner. You build a community. You can, business is a team sport, guys, and you got to put yourself around like-minded people that will push you and put friction in your life because they're doing it to help you, right?
For sure. Yeah, absolutely.
You probably had some hard conversations with some of those guys, right? Did they ever give you a verbal smackdown on some of your ideas and whatnot?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think as a business owner, your biggest enemy can be your own fear. You know, you may have fantastic ideas that are bouncing around in your head that if you implemented them and you actually put the rubber to the road, it could double your business next year. But the problem is that you by yourself, you'll continually, you know, beat yourself up over it and you'll, you know, sweat the details and you'll be like, "Oh, it's such a risk." And you go and you sit down with a business mentor and you tell them your idea and they're like, "Brilliant, why aren't you doing it? You know, it's a great idea. Give it a shot." And it's like, "Well, but, no buts. This is a good idea. Go do it." It's like, "Oh, okay." You know, it's that extra little kick in the butt that you need to get out there and just, you know, implement it. Do some action.
My friend Kevin Dabrowski, he talks about self-limiting beliefs. And on one of my other episodes, he was talking about, you know, our paradigm, our worldview is shaped on kind of what we knew growing up. And so as you break through these ceilings of self-limiting beliefs, there's tons of fear, tons of trepidation. And so we have a tendency to over-strategize and to over-analyze and to perpetually plan but never do anything. And he made the example about Mark Zuckerberg. And he's like, okay, so Mark Zuckerberg's daughter is going to grow up and she's going to look at her dad and say, okay, my dad works really hard. And he does this, this, and this, and he's worth $40 billion. And that's her normal paradigm, right? He's like, she's going to think people that work really hard and do the right thing, okay, they're that's worth $40 billion. And then you get someone else, like my dad is a hard worker like your dad, work really hard. You know, that means you work 80 hours a week. It doesn't matter if you like what you're doing, and you'll make a comfortable living, and then that's it. That's what hardworking people do. But it's all mental, man. It's just a game in our own brain.
Yeah, it's true. Absolutely.
So what's your end game? I mean, why are you doing this? What do you want to happen? Are you trying to take over the world or something? I mean, what does the end or the final destination look like to you?
You know, is really funny. And I'll actually recap this story because I know this is what actually got you and me introduced was I was actually listening to one of your random podcasts and kind of stumbled across you. And my jaw dropped to the floor when I heard your story, because before I'd even known you or even met you, me and my wife had a plan to sell our business, move to Costa Rica, engage in, you know, some ministry related activities down there. And, you know, here I am listening to this random podcast about a guy who owns a window cleaning business that's coming up on the size, you know, my business is coming up onto the size as where yours was when you made that move, sold your business, moved to Costa Rica. And it was so crazy because I just, you know, I brought my wife in and I'm like, listen to this. You won't believe this. And it was really cool. I mean, you know, that's what my end game is. You know, I don't want to be a slave to my business. I have no doubt that at this point in time, I could grow the business to any size that I wanted it to be. But I'm going to save that and build it up to the point to where we can let the next generation of owners get it to that point. I want to be able to sell my business so that I can, you know, focus more on my time freedom portion of things. And that's really what my end game is just to package it with a pretty little bow sitting on top and find that buyer that's passionate about the things that I'm passionate about in the business and kind of carry on that legacy.
Oh, that's amazing. And that is a weird story. And
it is.
Yeah. The podcast you heard me on wasn't this podcast. It was me being interviewed on some other random podcast by another guy. It's just so crazy that those dots connected. That's amazing. So I'll have to give you a tour of Costa Rica when you're ready to go check it out.
Yeah, for sure, man.
So let's talk about selling your business, okay? Because now you're scaling up. You got the team. We talked before I started recording about your passion. I asked you, I said, Brandon, what are you passionate about? You know, what's your deal? And you said, and I made some notes, you said to create an incredible people-focused service company. And by people, you meant your customers and your staff. You know, you want your staff making living wages. You want it to be a real career. Talk about that a little bit. Why do you have a heart like that? How important is it to have that type of view when you're running a business?
You know, the quote that Howard Partridge says, which I believe he also stole from someone else, you know, regarding the copycats of successes of others, which was, you know, if you have a dream, you have to build up the team. And if you now I'm going to misquote him.
I think I know what it is. If you help enough people get what they want, then you'll get what you want. Is that the one?
It's different than that. It's different than that. If you have the dream, but you don't build up the team, you either have to give up the dream or you have to build up the team. It's along those lines. I know I'm botching the plagiarism, but it's similar to that. But it really resounds with me because I love people. I mean, and when you're washing windows in customers' homes at the age of 13, you're homeschooling through high school. People were my only, you know, kind of social interaction that I had at that kind of critical age in my life of my, you know, middle to late teens. And all the people that I was socially interacting with were mature customers who, you know, you really wanted to interact and kind of enjoy that, you know, that people interaction. And so I'm very passionate about, you know, serving other people. And what I want my business to be known for is to be the most people-focused service company, period.
And that is so, epic. That is, you know, epic.
Not just having our customers be like, wow, everyone that came out, you know, at the house, the people we interacted with on the phone, they were so concerned about me. They, you know, they took care of us. But my employees, you know, we want to build a culture, and I'm very passionate about building a culture in my company of personal development and inner coaching. And so we actually have a library of, you know, personal development books and things that we have in our office that's available for anyone to come and check out at any point in time. They're books that have, you know, changed my perspective on life. And, you know, they're free and available to use that. And we also help with financial coaching as well to help people get financially stable in their own personal lives. And, you know, my goal is to create living wages for every single one of our employees that works for us. And, you know, right now we have, you know, full benefits that we offer: health, dental, vision, 401k. You know, our pay is higher than what the industry average is. And I want to continue to increase that, you know, to where people can come to work for us and feel like they're cared about. And because, I mean, inevitably that translates right down the line to your customers. If you have happy employees, your customers are going to feel that and they're going to notice it. And you're going to attract higher quality people who want to join that culture of a successful business and, you know, people-focused business. You're going to attract those people-focused type people.
Right. You're right. You're going to have a team of people who give a crap because their leader, you, cares about them genuinely and authentically. And look, a lot of the people that listen to this show have really little businesses. And I feel like when we talk about these things, they don't really believe it. They don't even realize how self-focused they are and how big time that holds you back. It holds you back huge. Guys, I just hope the listeners are really getting this. This is massively, massively, this is truth. 2 + 2 = 4. What Brandon just said will change your life and grow a better business, period. And when you're struggling and you can't barely pay your rent or whatever, it's very easy to focus on the money and your short-term needs and I got to get this and I got to get that and I'm scared and there's fear. Or an employee screws you over and you say, employees don't work or whatever. But when you really, you're all in, Brandon. You're all in on this idea that you have to serve the people around you. And so people like you can't fail in the long run. You'll have speed bumps. And I want to talk about some of those. Tell me some of the painful things that happened. Tell me a time or a story where you cared and you invested and someone still screwed you over, or they didn't show up for work, or they lied, or they stole. I mean, there has to be something, because this road is paved with pain as well as with good things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not all roses and butterflies in our business, for sure. You know, we have had our massive share of employee problems. I had one instance to where, you know, we really try to take care of our employees. And this was, you know, probably the first couple of years that as we were growing the business, I was very focused on the business growth. You know, I was very focused on, you know, more production and getting there and, you know, and just tuning out and not paying attention to my employees that much. You know, not doing one-on-ones with them, not doing employee reviews, you know, not having conversations, not visiting with them, getting to know them, getting to know their spouses, their families, what they're interested in, what their goals and dreams were. So I didn't have loyal employees. I didn't have very productive employees. You know, they were there 9 to 5. They probably went home and told their families they didn't really like their jobs. There was one point where a competitor of ours actually I don't know if poached is the right word, but I'm going to use it.
Headhunted.
Okay, headhunted. Headhunted, you know, 3 to 4 of my lead technicians and got them all. And so they left. I did have a non-compete clause and agreement with all of them. But, you know, you're kind of left with this force of, you know, well, now what? Do I sue, you know, my employees? Do I chase them down? You know, what do I do? Do I have to, you know, set an example out of them? And it actually really, really hurt, because, you know, we were trying to help these people out and give them a good wage. And they were leaving our company to go work as 1099 subcontract employees. And we were trying to, you know, relay to them what that really meant and how they'd have to be licensed and insured and, you know, and the safety repercussions that's going to fall upon them and the workers' comp stuff. But they, you know, we just didn't really have that solid relationship to where they really kind of believed that or cared about it. You know, all they saw was just the higher dollar per hour.
Yep.
And that was tough, because we lost, I think our company was about 7 employees. So that was over 50% of our employees left within a month.
Oh, that's a punch to the stomach, man. Did you go home and be depressed and cry to your wife for a couple of days and she told you to pull yourself together? Or when did the light bulb go on? How did you choose to learn from this rather than get negative about it?
You know, I've adapted the philosophy through a lot of study and reading books that any issues that we have in our company, before I point any fingers at anybody else, I force me to look at our systems, our processes, what I've implemented, the culture that I've created in my company, because 90% of the time, that's really what the origination is. Sure, you get the bad apples, you get the bad seeds, the people that come in and kind of poisonous to your group. But even then, if you had a good hiring system in place and the right interview questions to ask and the right you know, company culture, you wouldn't be attracting poisonous people. You wouldn't let them actually get hired. You know, if you weren't just looking for, you know, the someone that has a heartbeat to give them a squeegee and say, okay, go out, wash these windows, you know, you wouldn't force yourself to hire bad people. So whenever there's an issue in our business, I immediately look back and say, okay, where did we fail? Where did we as a company fail? You know, could we have had, you know, better loyalty incentive programs to, you know, increase our loyalty? Could we have people enjoy their jobs more? Can we engage with them more so that they feel a two-way relationship rather than just a one-way barking orders? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for us, that was, you know, a big turning point for us to really sit back and kind of reflect on our business and say, you know, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? And that kind of evolved into our mission statement.
It's funny for me, and I'm sorry to cut you off here. I'm smiling as you're talking. And the reason is because I think I have like 50 or a little more than 50 podcast episodes recorded on this show. And when I talk to the highest achievers, the interviews are almost identical every time, really. And it's because the things you're talking about is truth. This is how you do it, people. Hear me. I'm like virtually grabbing your neck and slapping you. Pull yourself right together, man. Pull yourself, like, wake up, people, you know, because it is our fault business isn't about money. It's about relationships. It's about service. It's about putting yourself in a position to outserve everybody around you. And it might seem counterintuitive, especially if you have lived in a negative environment or the people around you, you know, just don't talk like this. But trust me, Brandon's a real person. I'm a real guy. We really did this. Everybody that I've interviewed that has seven-figure businesses, this is how they say to do it, because this is how you do it. It just makes sense, I mean, from my perspective. So Brandon, look, I want to wrap it up here, and everything you said is amazing. I'm going to go back and listen to this again, because it's just gold. It's gold. Do you have any closing, you know, thoughts or encouragements for people that maybe feel stuck, or maybe they're in that old school mentality of the way your dad was, which was super admirable, hardworking guy with integrity, but their business isn't really a business? Any kind of thoughts you want to close us out with, go ahead.
You know, if I was to try to pare down my three biggest business lessons that I've learned in the last 4 years, the sooner you get out of the field, the better your business will be. The sooner you stop doing the work. And it's so hard. It is so difficult because you have so much fear that's battling you about my employees aren't going to do as good of a job as me, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But the point when I took myself out of the field and was able to focus on my business, that was the big turning point for me. Yeah. And it's a leap of faith, but when you do it, it's like you never look back, or at least you shouldn't ever look back. The E-Myth by Michael Gerber is like the book that opened my eyes to the world outside of my dad's owner-operator business. Incredible book, and I recommend that book to literally anyone that I talk to. So collectively, your audience, that would be my second point.
Yeah, for that, that's awesome. And that book is great. That was my big light bulb moment too, was with the understanding the concept of the E-Myth, the work on your business instead of in your business. I actually got to talk to Michael Gerber on the phone about 10 days ago for an hour. It was amazing. Anyway, so Brandon, I thank you very, very much for coming on here. You have nothing to gain. You just want to serve and help. And this is going to be an epic episode. People are going to love this. I guarantee it. And I appreciate your time very much, my friend.
Hey, thanks, Josh. Appreciate it, buddy.
Hey, thanks for hanging out, friends. And from all of us here at the Quick Talk Podcast team, we hope you love today's show. We hope that you were inspired to become a doer and not just a listener. Apply what you've heard today in your own business and watch things change for the better. Lastly, remember that all the money in the world can't save your soul. Seek first the kingdom of God, my friends. We'll see you next time.
For more information about the Quick Talk Podcast or Joshua's other businesses, visit our website, quicktalkpodcast.com. Have a blessed day.